But in the meantime, Om Shanti, and welcome to Pandavabhan. For those of you who aren't staying here, and I think that's the majority, so we thank Aruna Ben for bringing us here. It's our good fortune. So we welcome you all, and we especially welcome Aruna Ben to the session. It's the session is going to last for this morning, and then it's going to continue in Gyan Sarovar at 5:30 this afternoon. So please, all of you, even those who are here in Pandavabhan, make sure that you don't miss this opportunity. Aruna is skilled in self-development, and this really is a great opportunity for you to have many experiences and to progress. So Aruna she's an international figure. She was born in Kenya, educated in the UK, and worked in Canada. At the age of 8, she came into the awareness of this knowledge. She was exposed to Brahma Kumaris. And at the age of 14, she realized that her mission was of peace ambassador. So she has spent many years applying herself to this, and so her exposure in Kenya, the UK, Canada, and then progressing into the Middle East, where she's opened centers in Turkey and Kuwait and other places. So we have, she's a real international figure, and I'm sure that she will reach each and every one of us and touch our hearts. Thank you very much, Aruna Ben.
Om Shanti. I'd really like to make this more cozy rather than like a lecture style, so please feel free to come here or lean against the sofa. Maybe we can have, or the brothers come closer, so sisters can come closer. But those who want to sit on the floor, most welcome. And yeah. And I think the closer you are, the more you'll engage in this, let's say, workshop, stroke, seminar. So there's, shall we have sisters on one couch and brothers on another couch? Brothers, you want to move there? Yeah. No, take the couch, brothers. Can you tell them they can have the couch? Maria, you're on brother's side. Come on this side somewhere. Come here. Let's try and keep some Mariadas at least. Brother, why don't you move to the end? Yeah, that's it. Okay, everybody settled? And how's the translation? Which languages is it? Vietnamese and? And Korean. Korean is just one or two, right? Where's Mira? Mira? Where's Mira? Ah, okay. So how many Koreans? Uh-huh. Okay. And how many Chinese or Mandarin? translation? Okay. And Vietnamese is big, I know. Yeah. Okay. So I'll try to go slowly as well. Okay, so big warm welcome to everyone. Thank you to the team for having me here. I was coming for IPIP, so they kind of, yeah, asked me to see if I was available. So I wanted to really do the whole session in Pandav Bhavan because I feel this is the place where Brahma Baba crushed his ego. And it's got those vibes, right, of how Brahma Baba, the Dadis, everything they did that enabled them to become perfect. So, sorry, just one last question. Is it okay I sit here or you prefer I sit there? Because I didn't think there'd be that many. Celia? Yeah, see, because I didn't know there would be, you said only a few, so I was kind of... Okay. So, all settled? Okay. So, yeah, this is the place where I was saying the daddies, the seniors, advanced party souls crush their ego. So there's one statement that I'm going to keep repeating for a purpose. I'm going to say it now, I'm going to say it in the middle, I'm going to say it at the end. And that is, if it's ego, it hurts. If it's ego, it hurts. So always keep that in mind. If there's any kind of thought or feeling gone towards something that's happening, in other words, if I'm taken off my seat of self-respect, then that's ego. It really is. And I'm talking from experience. And it's a fact. And one of the examples I can give you is Bap Dada's meeting. How many of you have had question marks about where you're sitting? Exactly. And why are they sitting there? And why am I sitting here? And why have they got the couch and I've got the chair? Or why have they got the chair and I'm on the floor? But if you look behind you, how many people are sitting behind you in the Bap Dada meeting? 25,000. So you are still ahead of the 25,000, right? But we don't see that. We see that I'm two rows behind, or five rows behind, or eight rows behind. So this is the thing about the vices, that it's never enough. Yes, with greed we know it's never enough, but with ego it's never enough. No matter how much you feed the ego, it's never enough. So even the one sitting at the front will say, oh, why am I not on the stage? Right? It's never enough. The one on the stage will say, why am I not close to Bap Dada? The one close to Bap Dada might say, why am I not Bap Dada? Right? So that's the point. It's never enough. It's never enough. And so what I'm going to do, I also want to premise this session by saying that I did specifically say in the blurb that was sent out that if you want to do the inner work. And so today it's going to be a lot of reflection and a lot of looking at the self honestly And so I'm going to say something, then I'm going to share some story around it as much as I can. I tried to find as many stories as I could of the seniors. And then there'll be some reflective questions for you to answer. So really see this session as a tool to check where I'm at with my ego. And if at any point it's feeling uncomfortable, you're really free to leave. I would suggest you try to stick to it, stick with it, and just look at yourself honestly, even if it hurts. But it's all good. I feel like those who are still on this path have been crushing their egos. In other words, they're still at it. Every day it's a process of crushing the ego. And I don't think it's ever over until the end. Even in the last, I think, the 10 days of Brahma Baba, there was still a group of people who were anti-Brahma Baba. That had nothing to do with his perfection or lack of perfection. That was them being anti. That was them not, you know, being happy with who he was. Maybe jealousy, whatever. So we just have to continue to make our effort, okay? No matter what's going on around us. And we stay on the path because we want to become perfect. This is the point. So as I said, yeah, you choose. We often say, no, suffering is optional. So as I was saying, yeah, everything that happens, whatever it is, if I've created one extra thought around it, what does that mean? That I've come off my seat of self-respect. So how I plan to do this is to focus more on the ego part this morning, and in the evening more on the self-respect part. And actually, we don't normally focus on our negatives, right? We shouldn't be. But because this is so subtle, and because we're in Madhuban, it's a safe place, because we've got the time. So, yeah, let's look at the ego. Otherwise, normally, yeah, I think our effort should be, let's just keep highlighting the virtue, which is one of the solutions at the end of this. Keep looking at my inner beauty rather than my defects. As the sister was saying, yeah, I do really work a lot on myself, partly because I love it, and partly because I just want to get into the depth of the truth of what's happening with whatever issue it is. And then that's encouraged me to write about it, as you see in the stuff I write. But there was one month in which I was really looking at my feelings, like almost every 10-15 minutes for a month, like, of course, except when I was sleeping. And this is something I'm going to encourage you to do, is to just keep checking your feelings and where you're at. And if you're in a good space and good feeling, that's fine. Still, I know we can elevate that feeling, but if you're feeling something about something, then again, take time in your meditation, in your traffic control, to really look at that. And then, yes, check why. Am I hurt? Am I upset? Am I angry? Am I anxious? Am I afraid? And then look at that. So don't just say good feeling, bad feeling. Just, you know, highlight. Try to zoom in on the actual feeling. So just don't say good feeling, bad feeling. No. Say what is really going on inside. And look at that. Because feelings help us to check where we're at, actually, in Brahmin life. And of course, Sangam Yuga is meant to be a time to be spent in bliss and happiness, isn't it? So if we're wasting it on getting upset and angry, then as Baba says, you've wasted not just a second, but a year. And not just a minute, but, you know, several hundred years. So I think it's important to stay happy. So this is one of the first points. Where there is ego, ego doesn't want us to be happy. In fact, none of the vices want us to be content where we are. Because that's not the job of the vice. The vice is constantly telling us, you need more of me. So you can't be satisfied with me, because if you were satisfied with me, then how would I flourish? So the vices constantly want us to want more and more and more. And so the ego, or in ego state, we are not content. We are not happy. So that's why happy and ego are actually, again, opposites. Because in the moment that I'm being arrogant, think about, anyway, we're going to do that in a few minutes, but the moment that you're in your arrogance, you're not happy. You're not content because you want something different. The ego kicks in and says, no, I want that seat. No, I want that mic. No, I want that slot. You see? So it's not content, right? It's discontent. So that's what I'm saying about the checking. So if you don't mind, it doesn't matter. This is an expression in English. I don't know if you have it in your languages. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter. This is another way of looking at the ego. The fact that I mind, in other words, the fact that it bothers me, right? When to mind something means it bothers you, it's irritating you. So the fact that I mind, that means it matters. Otherwise, you would not have a thought about something you are not interested in. You wouldn't mind. You know, so right now I was just shuffling some people, right? So these lovely, sweet Korean brothers. They were willing to get off the couch to sit on the floor. Because I guess they didn't mind, right? But then I said, no, it's okay, take the other couch. But if I want the couch desperately, if I have some vested interest in something, if I think the couch is my power, the couch is my wealth, the couch is my identity, the couch is my worth, then am I going to let go of the couch? No, I'm not. But if I'm just using the couch to sit on, right? I can sit somewhere else, right? Easily. So this is what we're doing all the time, is we're putting, and it's a Lokic thing. It's a very gross Lokic, body conscious thing to do, that we put value onto something that is not really divine. And that's why Baba says again and again and again, like, who am I, who am I, who am I? Keep coming back to who am I and what is my worth and my value? And it's more than this. It's more than the couch. It's more than the position. I'm worth more than my position, actually. Think like that. So all these Avyat Murlis, we'll have some of that in the evening. I've got some separated. So we'll have some of those about what Baba's saying about self-respect. And he's really encouraging that in us, isn't he, every day? Stay on your seat of self-respect. So when I value me, when I know who I really am, then these things mean nothing to me. That's the point. Okay. What does that sound like? Ego? Okay. So, you all have pen and paper. So, before I give you more information on ego, what I'd like you to do is... we don't have a proper flip chart. So I'd like you to draw a graph like this, okay? Like a grid, right? Okay? So this line... It's okay, yeah, we'll manage. So just do a graph like this, down and straight, okay? So this line represents experience. So it's 0 at the bottom to say 100. 0 to 100 is the measurement here, okay? And that is experience. And this line here, the horizontal line, is the time. So what I would do if I were you is maybe do 5 and then 10 and then 20, 30, 40, 50. So however old you are, you will put that many years here at the bottom. Everyone understand? This one is experience and this one is time. Okay, done that? So now what I want you to do is I want you to jot down when you felt your ego developed. So it's developing all the time, and we won't go into the Freudian explanation of ego. But yes, even a kid of 2 years, 3 years has developed some ego. Okay, so you've got the toddler ego, you've got the teenage ego, you've got the adult ego. So I'd just like you to reflect a bit in your life as to when you felt there was some kind of ego birth taking place in your life. Until you come to now, your last point, and what is your ego like now? In other words, give a word. If your ego had a personality, give a word to it. You okay with that? You all understand? Ego birth. At different ages. So I'd like you to just look at your life and see the development of the ego. Maybe you got your degree, you graduated, and that was another kind of ego. Maybe marriage, maybe promotion, maybe ownership of a house, business. What has your ego been based on? Just looking at the graph. Again, look at the timeline. Maybe you developed some hobby, some skill, and people said, oh wow, you're so good at that. And then your ego started to grow. Time? Anybody needs more time? Just raise your hand. Okay. 2 more minutes. Became a Brahmin, and then that was another ego, right? I'm a yogi now, I'm a Brahmin, and I'm better than you. And then even in Brahmin life, we get given position. Oh, now you're the director of the center. That's another ego. Or retreat center coordinator, program coordinator. That's another ego. So just take time now to look at the different ways in which my ego has developed. And what has been the foundation of that ego? Maybe I had good parents, a good family name, a good clan. Maybe I went to Harvard or Yale or Cambridge. That we'll keep referring to that. Just keep that now. So I want to share a few stories and also a few things from the Murli. And so Baba had said actually in 1969 that, yes, Clay, I'm controlling it. Create the ambience. So Baba had said in 1969 that Baba had said that now that you will be more in seva, service, there will be one major maya that will come to the children. And that is buddhi ka abhiman, which is the ego of the intellect and of the seva that you will do. And so Baba said the method to conquer this is to remember the one line that I am an instrument. Me nimitto. And together with that, Baba had said that the only seva that is considered seva is nimit bhav, which is to be an instrument, feelings of instrument, nimit bhav and nirmal vani, which means speaking sweetly, sweet words, sweet, nirmal, kind, sweet, vani, words. So Baba said only that is considered seva. And if there is the consciousness of I instead of instrument, then Baba said, again he rhymed these words, he said, there will be Magruri, Murjaish and Mayusi, which is ego, sadness, or ego, wilting and sadness. So where there's the consciousness of I, the body consciousness, yes, the ego, I'll wilt, and there'll be the sadness. And then Baba also rhymed, again 1969 Murlis, Baba said that where there is kamna, there cannot be samna. So where there is desires, desires do not allow you to face the obstacles, face the challenges. And so Baba described what is the kamna, what is the desire, and that is, well, I'll just say in English, that my name should be there. Why didn't you take my advice? Why didn't you keep me in front? So Baba said, these kamnas will not let you face anything. So be humble. So you can see how ego has been really our close ally, you can say. Anyway, I'll come to that in a minute. Just to talk about Brahma Baba now. I don't know how many of you know the history of Brahma Baba, like, completely. But Brahma Baba, as you know, he had become a self-made millionaire. So I think you all know he was the child of a school principal. So he wasn't earning much. His father wasn't earning much. His uncle was known to be a very, very big donor, philanthropic. He was known in the Sindh community there in Pakistan. But Brahma Baba didn't have much. And so Brahma Baba's father sent him to Calcutta, which at that time was the capital of India. During the British Raj had made Calcutta the capital because it was a port. So Brahma Baba was sent there, and he was sent with 15 rupees at that time. And you go there normally with a 3-year contract. So Brahma Baba went to Calcutta with a 3-year contract, and they don't pay you every month. They pay you at the end of the 3 years. And Brahma Baba was 18 at that time. So when he first went there, he went as an employee. But because he was smart and he gave ideas, and, you know, he had ideas for designs, etc. So then his manager, the next 3 years, he gave him a promotion and made him a little bit of a senior person, like a manager, supervisor. And so that was the second 3 years. So he'd come back, meet the family, and the family said they also went to see him there, but he couldn't come to Karachi. And then the last 3 years, when he was invited back, actually as a partner. Not as a fully fledged partner, but a percentage. And so this is how Brahma Baba made his wealth. And then slowly Brahma Baba didn't like the way that his manager or his boss wouldn't give him exact money that was due to him. So say it was like 18,560, so his boss would say, okay, just 18,000, forget the 560, you know. So many times, you know, his manager would just make a round figure, but a low round figure. And so Brahma Baba kept telling his dad, I don't like working there because he's not honest. So that's when finally he decided, I'm going to go and do my own business. So he already had all this clientele, all these people that were coming to the company. They started, you know, those who liked him and liked his design started to go to him. And that's how Brahma Baba started to make his money. So anyway, the point is, yes, Brahma Baba was self-made through his hard effort, his sharp intellect, business sense. So imagine somebody like that, you know, who dressed his wife and his daughters in so much gold and jewelry and different designs every day. Nirmal Shanta Dadi would say every day they would have a different necklace. And partly Baba would put different necklaces on them so that they could in a way, advertise them, model them, you know? So somebody would see it and say, oh, we want something like that. And that very often happened. And Yashoda Mata, you know, Brahma Baba's wife, she was wearing such heavy diamonds that she had to have her ears sewn 3 times. Because the weight of the diamonds just made the hole bigger. And here, twice, she had to have it sewn, the hole sewn twice. So what I'm saying is, imagine this much wealth, and of course the property, you know, Baba's house at that time when they sold it in Karachi was 55,000 rupees, which in today's currency would be like crores of rupees, you know. So he went from all that to coming here, living simply. And as you know, there's Baba's room, and Baba's toilet was outside in the garden where there is Baba's hut. So Baba didn't have a toilet there. In the cold, he used to come out at night. If he had to go, he'd have to walk in the cold to go to the toilet. And even when other houses were being built, and the children said, Baba, move into something more comfortable. And Baba said, no, I'm fine where I am. And so this is the kind of renunciation, the humility that Brahma Baba exercised, you know, from where to where. Okay, he started simply, but then he had everything, right? And he lived a life of comfort. And they had like 8 maids and servants. They had like, I don't know, 6 to 8 cars in the house. So they had drivers and cars. So a real life of luxury to now then a life of simplicity. But Brahma Baba still, when they came here, they still continued to do all the chores with the children. So I have a few stories on that. So one was actually Dadi Prakashmani's story. So Dadi Prakashmani, well, I'll share that after one because that's about her. Let me share the one about Jagdish Bhai. So Jagdish Bhai said the first time he came to Madhuban, of course he was told Mount Abu, so he saw the address and he came. I mean, as a BK he came. But see, Jagdish Bhai was already like a well-established author in the world, in India at least. And so he was of that caliber, you could say, like an important person. And so he decided to visit Brahma Baba. And he said that when I came, and this was near Bridgekoti, so he said, when I came, I saw Brahma Baba in his shorts, and he was picking up the stones, the bricks, and clearing the road, that road that's up leading up to that Sunrise Hotel. And he said he was cleaning up that road with the children. And he said, I'd been to so many different organizations, but I'd never seen the guru ever come off his gaddi, off his seat. And this was Brahma Baba, not just off his seat, but he was doing the work with the children. And so this really touched him, this sense of, you know, humility of Brahma Baba. And Brahma Baba would take the cow dung and he would make the cakes and he would be pasting them on the Pandavan wall, you know, because normally you dry it so that you can use it for cooking. So again, this is the world emperor, you know, and he's making cow dung cakes. But inside, what was his feeling? What was his feeling? That I'm the emperor, right? Just by doing that job, it didn't bring him down. It didn't bring his sense of self down. So really, it's not about what we do, it's about the consciousness with which we do it. That's the important thing. So the story I wanted to share of Dadi Prakashmani was her humility, actually, that once a very big officer had come to Pandav Bhavan and he had come to complain about a mistake that one of the other children had made. And so he was leaving now. He said his point and then he was leaving quite angrily. And Dadi Kumarka went herself behind him towards his car with her hands like this to ask for forgiveness. And this act in itself melted that officer, and I mean, he was really touched. He really melted that such a senior person of the organization herself is coming behind me to ask for forgiveness. And as a result, he, you know, turned around. He was forgiving. So, you can see how in the yajna, you know, humility has really won the hearts of people. And then there's something from this morning's Murli that Baba said. Baba said, by following the dictates of Ravan, you have now become as worthless as shells. Ram Shiv Baba is now giving you directions. There is victory through having faith. There will never be any loss in this. Right? If we follow Baba's directions, no loss. The Father will even change any loss into a profit, but only for those whose intellects have faith. Those whose intellects have doubt will continue to choke inside. Those whose intellects have faith can never choke. They can never experience loss. Baba himself gives a guarantee. So this is the point I want to mention about faith, which Brahma Baba had and what Baba's encouraging us to have. And for faith, again, you have to let go of the ego. Faith is the aspect of surrendering the intellect. And there's the story of, let me tell you this other story. Some of you might have heard it many times now, but I really like it. So what happened, one day there was a sister who was in charge of security, and in the early days, Brahma Baba's days. And so what happened is she went for lunch, she put another sister in her place. She went for lunch, and there the sister serving announced that no one should take dal twice today. And Baba, Mama and all the children were sitting down to eat. And she announced no one should take dal twice today. So Baba didn't like this comment. So Baba got up and he went into his room. So of course, how can Mama start to eat? How can Dadi start to eat? So they followed him. And Baba was sitting in his seat. I mean, on the gaddi in his room. And he was in meditation. So after some minutes, Mama said, Baba, the children are waiting. And Baba said, Baba is talking to Baba. Then after a few minutes, he got up and they came back to the dining. They ate. Then the sister went back on duty to security, the one who was sharing this story. And then she saw this bullock cart coming with some stuff, some bags at the back. And she's telling the bullock cart, there's no way in. Go back. You know, they're continuing to come in. I'm not sure actually it's this end or this end, but anyway, they're continuing to come in. And the sister's saying, not here, not here. But he continues to come in. And then she asked him, what's the problem? And he said, no problem, but I've come to drop this off here. And she says, what's in your bullock cart? And he says, dal. Bags of dal. Lentil, you know? And she says, he goes, I don't know, but I've been inspired to drop them here. So then they went in and told Baba. Baba said, okay, give the child some lunch, then Baba will meet. So he had lunch, then he was taken to Baba's room, and Baba said, okay, child, what's the story? He said, I was just taking the lentils to the market to sell. But somebody, you know, this in Hindi, prerit kiya means he was touched, he was inspired to do this. Somebody from above told him, you have to take this here to this place. And he goes, I'm just doing what I've been asked to do. So imagine, like, so when this sister was sharing the story, the old Dadi, she was saying it was like, I mean, in our modern day language, we'd say we didn't realize the pizza would come so quickly, you know? You order the pizza and it comes right away. So this is Brahma Baba putting a request to Shiv Baba, and Shiv Baba delivered, you know, right away. So this is the kind of faith. You can see like many stories like that where Brahma Baba just had absolute faith that he's in charge and he will provide and he will get it done. And many people had visions that they should come here and donate the money. So why? Because it was Shiv Baba touching them. And that's how the yajna continued. That's why Brahma Baba knew that there would never be a day where we would be without food. So this is the kind of humbling that's required. This is the kind of surrender of the intellect that's required. You know, even today, there's many Brahmins who are constantly worried about what's going to happen to them when they get old. But if you're Baba's child and if you have full faith in Baba and you trust, then you'll be taken care of. In some way, in some shape or form, you will be taken care of. But when I think I'm doing it, when I think I have to take care of myself, if there's that personal ego of the intellect, then it doesn't work. It doesn't work because what you're doing is you're not allowing divine intervention. You're not trusting Baba. You're not trusting the drama. And then of course you won't be happy because you're always worried, you know, about what's going to happen. And then of course Baba said the other thing, right? You can wear what you want. Just renounce the consciousness of the body and bodily relations. So again, you can put in your chart, you know, at what point you started to become conscious of what you were wearing and how you looked in what you were wearing. Because again, that we have to go back there and break that illusion that this gave me some kind of identity. Okay, so let's talk about ego. Okay, ego death, right? It's very painful, but it's very rewarding. Actually, the ego should have died the moment that I took a Brahmin birth, right? It should have died. But there was, as I said, our ego's been our very close friend, and we have continued to think that I need him or her to help me get through life. So in other words, the vices have strongly convinced us that we need them. We need anger to get the job done. We need greed to be something or somebody. You know, we need ego to show how much power we have. Do you see? The egos have convinced us that we need them. And Baba is trying so hard from his side to convince us that we need him. And that's why there's the battle of Baba or Ram and Ravan. That with Ram, it's just faith. But with Ravan, it's more, cajoling, convincing, confusing. So we've got to now begin to learn to trust Baba. That with Baba and what he teaches us, that is the way to peace and happiness. Do you see? Ravan doesn't want to die. Even in throughout the Ramayana, Ravan doesn't want to die. But at the end, whose victory is it? Ram, yeah. So truth, right? Truth always prevails. There is victory for the truth. Okay, so ego death, yeah. So in spirituality, we have to die many times before we can live fully again. So every day is like a mini death, isn't it? Yeah? Every time something happens, you have to, like, bite your tongue, or, in other words, no, not say that, or not want that, or not do that. So again, let's try to just be detached observers of our ego as we do this traffic control. Okay, I'll continue till then. Anyway, okay, let's just do a little meditation till it comes. So yeah, back to your looking at your chart, I mean, in your mind. Okay, I tell you what. Because I see a lot of you falling asleep. Why don't you all stand up? Okay, and we're going to do something. What are we going to do? Get some space. Everyone move forward so you get space. Yeah, but... we're going to box Ravan, yeah? How are we going to box Ravan? So we're going to really kill this Ravan, right? So, hit as hard as you can. Of course, whilst being divine. Vedant, come up. Who else wants to come up? Running away from Ravan. Get that blood going. Spin the cycle. Okay, good. So we'll do that every so often, yeah? So you don't fall asleep. We'll find someone else to beat up. Okay. Okay, now what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to draw another chart. So I'd like you to... just draw like a grid like this. So this is longer, and then second and third, okay? Can you see it from there? No? Just draw three lines down and quite a few lines across. That's it. Okay? And so this column is the event. First column, event. Second column is thought. And third column is feeling. Okay? Event, but make the event column a bit wider. So I'm going to give you some situations about the ego and tell you, as I said, a few stories, and then I'm going to ask you questions, okay? So, the ego makes us serious. So that's the first event you can put in that box. Ego equals serious, right? Ego makes us serious about everything. So everything is important, everything has to be accurate, everything has to be on time, and if it's not, I'm not happy. Isn't that true? Right? With ego, everything has to be perfect, right? But, I mean, particularly here, serious, in the sense of the ego doesn't like to have fun. And the arrogant person, you try to, you know, tickle him, he's only going to get mad, isn't he? Because he thinks he has to be serious to stay in his power. So seriousness, think about it, seriousness is not divine. Because when I'm too serious about the drama, I'm not really enjoying the drama. I'm too busy trying to make it perfect rather than to appreciate the unfolding of the drama. So if I get too serious with the drama, right? So say for example the buses leave here, right? On time, right? Mostly on time. But say by chance, it's 5 minutes delayed. If you're getting angry, upset about it, that means you're not going with the flow of the drama. Right? So in other words, you're losing your peace and happiness. Lighten up. Okay, fine. 5 minutes late. So what? You're there on time. You did your best. Now leave the rest to drama. But if I'm trying to fix everything, it doesn't work. So here's a story. It's a story about Situ Dadi, who says that Baba taught me manners. Once halwa was prepared, that was very tasty. It was my duty to serve that day. Many asked for a second helping. I went to Baba and asked, Baba, many sisters are asking for seconds. What should I do? Baba said, today is your turn to serve, isn't it? So, give them seconds. What will happen if you don't eat for once? Right? So Baba told her, you give up yours, right, to give others. So I served them second helpings. Then that evening in class, Baba said to Mama, Mama, today the halwa was so tasty. I wanted to eat more, but I didn't. Why? So Baba's telling Mama in front of all the children in the class, I wanted to eat more, but I didn't. Why? Because if I were to eat seconds, others would follow me. The amount of halwa prepared is also measured, isn't it? Right? Because in those days, again, not to waste anything, they'd only make enough that was needed. Or the fruit. There'd only be enough fruit as there was the children, right? So, Mama, I did not eat more even though I would have liked to. Those who ate seconds understood that they should not have eaten more. Baba wasn't always straight with us, but gave us corrections with a lot of yukti to teach us children. So, it's kind of connected in that it's a serious point, but Baba handled it lightly. He could have just told them, don't eat, right? But how did he do it? He did it in a light-hearted way. And then Amir Chanbhai. When I first met Baba in Madhuban in 1958, I had the most amazing experience of love and power. It was the moment I had been waiting for. As soon as I entered in Madhuban, I had that happy feeling of limitless peace. Sakar Baba's personality was very powerful and very loving. One felt a sense of belonging as soon as one got close to him. When I went to Madhuban for the first time, I was just 19 or 20. On one occasion, beloved Baba took my hand and took me to every room and told me, "This is the store, this is the kitchen, this is what's kept in the store." Baba showed me everything and explained it to me with a lot of love. But I did not understand the secret behind that. Now I understand that Baba wanted to make me feel that Baba's place is my own place and that it was necessary to have all the details. And then there's another story of Chakradhari Didi. And so what happened is that in those days when they used to shower, their bathrooms had kind of a semi-wall, like it wasn't closed from the top. So what they used to do is they'd say, "Can you pass me your soap?" So this one would use and then throw it over and give to the other sister. So that day Chakradhari Ben didn't have her soap, so she told the other sister, "Can you throw me your soap?" And so Lachudadi heard this, and Lachudadi was in charge of the store of all these personal items. So she told Baba, Chakradhari doesn't have soap. Can you give her some soap? So Baba said, okay. But Baba said, wait. So what Baba did is he covered it with some dye. Okay? And so then he wrapped it again and he gave it to Lachudadi, and she kind of understood his games, and they gave it to Chakradhari Didi. So next morning in class, they thought she would have used the soap, right, and been colored with this. But anyway, nothing happened. She came to class. At the end of the class, Baba said, "Chakradhari, did you use the soap?" And she said, "Not yet, Baba." But anyway, so she didn't end up using the soap yet, but she also understood that Baba's playing some tricks. Baba's playing some games. When she opened it, she understood. Because actually this had happened, she understood because this had happened to another sister before, where that had some dye on it. So when you go like this to do this, you get colored with that dye. And this was Baba's way of playing, or just joking, you know, being lighthearted with the children. And then there's another story which I'm not sure you're familiar with, but once, you know what Baba did? This is really extreme. What Baba did is he put out an ad in the newspaper for someone to marry Dadi Kumarka. And so in the morning paper, they read this, that so-and-so's daughter, so they knew it's her, right, Dadi Prakashmani, and looking for a really divine, well-mannered, all these divine qualities suitor for this beautiful girl, also divine and full of qualities. And so the Dadis were sharing this on stage, actually. We have that recording of them sharing it on stage. And they were giggling and giggling because Dadi Chandramani said, so many boys came. And, and they also brought this, they bring this necklace that, you know, if you agree, it's like we're engaged, you know, if you're engaged right here. They put it on you and, you know, you belong to them. So what happened is when each one came, then they were being interviewed. And what was the final question of the interview? Can you guess what was the final question of the interview? Yes, can you stay pure? So everything else was yes, I'll look after her, yes, I'll take care, yes. but will you stay pure? And they all failed in that, you know. So they would fail in the next one, they would fail in the next one. And so of course Dadi Kumarka took it really well, really positively. But she went to Baba afterwards and said, Baba, what if my father finds out that you've done this, you know? And she said, Baba laughed and laughed and laughed, you know? And of course, he can only do it with Dadi Kumarka, because she is the purest and she will have no, you know, attraction to anyone. But that was just Baba having some fun, you know, just playing games with the children. So, yeah, so back to you now, okay? So back to you now. Just look at your seriousness. So the question I want to put to you is, in what ways am I serious? So answer that question. In what ways? In what ways means in what areas? And then try to see what's behind that seriousness. Yes, we know it's ego, but what else? Like, are you trying to hide something? Protect something? Why am I so serious? That's the question. Why am I so serious? Serious music. Okay, next question. How can I lighten up? How can I lighten up? Try and see at what point in your time chart you became serious. Was there some incident that happened that triggered it? At what point in your life did you become serious, or were you born serious? Maybe certain duties, responsibilities, maybe public opinion made you serious. Image. Just last question. So by lightening up, how would this make me, I don't want to say a better person, but a better yogi? by lightening up, by being lighter, happier, more jovial, humorous person, how would that make me a better yogi? You look at yourself, look at your personality. So in other words, see the benefit of lightening up. Next event, ego loves to talk, right? Ego loves to talk, okay? So I'd like you now, just find someone next to you, and I'd like you to talk about some achievement of yours, something you've achieved, whatever it is. I'd like you to just find someone, just 1 minute, that's it. So A and B, A speaks first, B then speaks in the second minute. Just talk about an achievement. What's been your achievement? Layla? She's a lovely sister from Vietnam. She's a lovely sister from Kuwait. Okay, should be on the second person by now. Find someone. Are you from Vietnam? Find someone. Or get into threes. Sen, tell him. He can get in a group of three otherwise. Brother? Does he understand English? Okay, just do it together. Okay, enough time? Enough time? Okay, stop. So you all failed. You all failed. What did you fail in? Ego loves to talk. I'm telling you 1 minute, then I'm telling you, okay. Huh? Salva is saying we were just being obedient. So anyway, that's the point, right? Isn't that the point? So as you were sharing your achievement, in what consciousness you were sharing it? Huh? Just be honest, it's okay. We're family, we're all making our effort. What consciousness you were sharing it with? Body conscious? Well, it doesn't have to be. I mean, if it is, it is, but it doesn't have to be. Huh? Pride, okay. Somebody was sharing it with pride as a challenge, right? As an achievement, yeah? Any other ways in which you can share your achievement?
I was very happy while sharing the moment.
Very happy while sharing the moments. Humble? Who was humble? Felt happy? Yeah, that's no problem. See, yeah, so this is the thing also. There's no harm in sharing. Like, I don't know why when souls are asked to share their qualities, suddenly they become arrogant, actually. Because it's like, I think we need to see it as these are God-given. Baba's given us these qualities. It's because we belong to Baba. Baba has taught us this. So actually we should say it with pride. That, yes, Baba made me this. Right? Pure pride, yeah. But it's when I'm really body conscious and someone says, share your quality, then I become shy. Because I'm body conscious. Because I'm thinking it's me. And I. So be mindful of that too. That you can share your achievement. You can share your strengths, qualities. But do it as, you know, we say like in Hindi, Prabhu Den. You know, it's like a real boon from God. It's a blessing from God. And so why I shouldn't share that? This is what Baba's bestowed onto me. So say it with that pure self-respect, pure pride. So anyway, you didn't fail. I'm just saying, I was just highlighting the point of how when we start talking, we can't stop, right? This was also the point that it's never enough. Okay, and so one story that is kind of connected with this is, this is the story about this sister who, there was a little cupboard that had to be fitted in the corner. So there was Brahma Baba, Mama, and this little girl, sister. And so they were trying, it was a tiny job, they were trying to fit it in some corner. Something was there, I don't know, but and so Baba said, no, no, this will not fit in the corner. And the sister said, yes, it will, Baba, let me show you. So she got in there and she started moving it around and it went in the corner. She said, see, see, Baba, I told you. And so Baba said, very good. And Baba walked away. But then Mama, you know, Mama was always a bit serious, right? But in a divine way. So Mama just walked away. But the girl felt that something was not right. Mama was not happy with something. So the girl went and asked Mama later, Mama, is there something, did I do something wrong? And Mama said, okay, since you're asking. So Mama said, now that you've done this, you've fitted the cupboard in the corner, now you will always think that you are right. And anytime Baba says something, you will always think that you know better than him. In other words, you've given birth to your ego. You've given birth to the fact that you think that you are right. And so Mama said, if you had just left it to Baba. In other words, surrendered your intellect in that moment, then you would have developed that sanskar of letting go of your ego, of you being right, and you would have learned surrender instead of ego or arrogance. And isn't this true? Like, there's so many times when we know we are right, when we know that this doesn't fit, or it will fit like this, or this doesn't go there, or, you know. But in what different ways, you know, we are trying to prove ourselves all the time. And so this is where really, you know, silence is the key, isn't it? Sometimes it's better to just shut up and allow the drama. Because the more I interfere with the drama and the script of that person, what am I doing? I'm actually exercising my ego I might think I'm helping them, but I'm exercising my ego, my authority. So it doesn't matter if they're right or not, but what do I have to do? I have to humble my intellect into accepting that what's right in the drama is right in the drama. You understanding? So it's not important whether that thing is right or not, fixed or not, fitted or not. It doesn't matter. What matters is how am I using my intellect? How am I using my mind? Because I'm the one that has to make myself perfect. So you can apply this to your centers, to your work, to your friends, to, you know, how much are we interfering with others and their script and the drama. So anyway, back to this sheet, right, the event. So yeah, back to that, sorry, you were supposed to also put with the Sirius. So Sirius goes there, then ego loves to talk. So you're meant to look at yourself and see, okay, what thought comes up when you love to talk? And what feeling comes up when you love to talk? Okay? You're meant to fill that in. And then, a few other questions around that. Okay, next question. So why do I love to talk? And I think you know what I mean, like in particular, like in terms of the ego. Why do I love to talk? If you want, you can get plastic chairs, put them here. Yeah. Why do I love to talk? Okay, next question. What am I trying to prove? What am I trying to prove? What am I trying to prove? Okay, next event. Okay? So ego loves to be right. Right? Ego loves serious. Ego loves to talk. Ego loves to be right. And all the time. And ego does not like to discuss. Isn't it? It's my way or the highway, right? That's the ego, isn't it? So ego doesn't want to debate, doesn't want to be around the round table. Ego doesn't like to reason. Because the ego is insecure. So what if somebody else's idea is a better idea? So it's better I don't hear it, right? Better we stick to my idea. So in this way, we've actually become slaves to our egos. And our ego always made us feel that we are right. And then there's always the inverted ego, you know, where other people are pretending to let you go first, but that's really their ego. Right? You know that, right? In other words, they've got failure to, they've got fear of failure, so they'd rather you go and make the mistake first. And so there they put you first. You understand this? So they want to be right, but this is what we call in a passive way. Some want to be right in a more active, vocal way, some want to be right in a more passive way. In other words, by proving you wrong. Do you see? So, if we really understood that, you know, like, look at all the wars that are created in the world. They're all based on I'm right and you're wrong, right? Like, why does America keep bullying other countries? Because it thinks it's right. It thinks it's the protector of the world. It protector of the ecosystem. It's protector of all our resources. So it thinks it's right. So when we think we are right, we actually go and bully other people. And sometimes that bullying is very subtle. So just think about, anyway, we'll reflect in a minute. But here's a story of Sittu Dadi again, who lost the keys to the store. So I used to look after the kitchen store in Madhuban. Once a group came to Madhuban and asked Baba for halwa to be prepared. I had lost the store key and saw that the halwa could not be prepared. Baba said to her, "You don't sit in class today." If I didn't sit in class, that also meant that I could not eat that day. Right? If you don't do class, you can't have food. Later, Baba found the key and gave it to Mama. The next day, Baba said to me, "Child, you made such a big mistake. So many children were deprived of Baba's toli. Never make such a mistake that causes many to have sorrow." And then, this is the punchline, right? "If you cannot take care of the simple key now, how can you take care of the keys of the golden age?" If you cannot take care of this simple store key, how can you take care of the keys of the golden age? Will there be keys in the golden age? Will the doors be locked? Huh? I can't hear you. Metaphoric. Oh, metaphoric, yeah, exactly. Well done, Click. Okay, so here's another one, Nirvay Bhai. Once I went by car to Pune from Mumbai with Pitashri Brahma. We stopped on the way to eat our breakfast. On our return, I pointed out the place. Right? But like he said, "Baba, we stopped here last time. Do you remember?" And Brahma Baba said, "Child, why do you remember such things? Remember the things that will earn you an income. To remember all the rest is wasteful, and all your time and energy will be spent." He paid such great attention to every breath of his life and taught us children to do the same. So I felt both these had an element of like wanting to be right and kind of wanting to be in Baba's good books. So back to you now. Back to the sheet. Right? Ego loves to be right. Put that in number 3. So what is your thought when you love to be right? What is your thought? What is the thought you're having when you feel you want to be right? And what is your feeling? Huh? Very strong. Okay, very strong, but try to describe it a bit more. Wadad, like, okay, intense, but in what way? What's going on? Try to feel it. Try to feel what's the thought. Okay, others are less. Yeah. Righteousness, stubbornness, yeah. Huh? I'm knowledgeable, yeah. I know it all, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you might think the other person is stupid or dumb. See what it is for you. You know, there's this saying, right, that do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? So it's better to be happy than to be right, right? So question to you now, what if I let go of being right? What will happen? What if I let go of being right? What will happen? Just take a minute and then I can take answers, yeah. Just take a minute to write it down. Next question. And really answer these as honestly as possible, right? Nobody's going to see them. And so what if I'm wrong? What will happen if I'm wrong? So what if I'm wrong? Write the answer to that. What will happen? So what if I'm wrong? Okay, next question. And so what if I make the other one right or more right than me? What's going to happen to me? So I think I'm right, okay? But now I say, no, you're right. Your idea's better. You're better than me. So, what will be the feeling, the thought, what will happen? छोड़ो राजेश मैं कहती हूँ अच्छा गीत है yeah anybody wants to share answers I thought we would do it at the end but we can do it as we go along so any answers to that what if I let go of being right what will happen So you allow the other to make their mistakes. You want them to go through the process, okay? If I let go of being right, allow others, let them go through the process in a good way, right? Best intention, okay? Yes? I'm great, I gave chance to the other. So, what, that's coming from ego or is it coming from a good heart? Ego, could be ego, could be a good heart, but that's what you have to check, right? Yeah, what else? Give them a chance to learn from their mistake, yes. But again, not in an angry tone, right? There you go make your mistake. You see, yeah, not like that. But really with a big heart, okay. If you make a mistake, I'm there for you. Okay? A and they'll learn from you. And so what if I'm wrong? So what if I'm wrong? Huh? Again? I might feel depressed, yeah? I might feel hopeless. I might feel ashamed, yeah? So I can learn. What about humbled? If I'm wrong, I'm humbled, no? There are others who know better than me. Oh, okay. So I'm not so great. Okay. There are more people perfect than me. So it's this, we've really got to be quite, what's the word, courageous, right? In the face of ego. Because if we want to kill it, we really have to recognize it and, you know, and be willing, right? So again, as I'm saying, we have to exercise the intellect to let go, to humble. So if I'm wrong, it's good. It brushes my ego. Like it refines my humility, let's say. Yeah. Yeah, actually, that they used to say this to us. I remember in the early days, I came onto the center in the 80s, and that was the training that was given to all of us, not only in India, but also in London. And so these were the three words, huh? Marmar, sik sik, juk juk. Marmar, sik sik, juk juk. So marna means to die. So you have to die at every step. Sik sik, sikna, learn at every step. And jukna, juk juk, means you have to bow at every step. So this was the advice to us moving into the center. If you want to survive the center, you have to die, you have to learn, and you have to bow. Give respect to others. Yeah. Put others forward, give respect. Yeah. Do they teach you that in Australia? Okay, next. What if I make others right? What if I make others right? What will happen if I put others in front, make them right? The other person gets a chance. Huh? Build their character. Build their character. It builds cooperation in the group. They will love you. And what about blessings? You get so many blessings, right? You want all the blessings. And yeah, they will also learn from you. That, yeah, just as this one put me forward, let me put others forward. So you're creating a domino effect of putting others forward. Right? Good, okay. Okay, next event. Ego loves to be comfortable. Right? So ego wants its comfort zone, it wants to feel safe and secure. If there is any hardship, the ego loses its patience, its peace, happiness, and therefore, missing out on life experiences. And I can really share this experience of mine coming to India. So, of course, I started coming to India when I was like 7 years old. And at that time, let's say I didn't like it. And so first time my parents brought me to India, and I thought it was a really dirty place. And so every time, every year I came, I had this kind of arrogant attitude, like, oh, they're so dirty and I'm so clean. Or, And I remember clearly there was this bathroom which was really quite clean. Now if I look back, it was really quite clean. But there was a big ant walking through it, like this big, not the little one, this big, you know. And just because of that one ant, I wouldn't go into the bathroom. Because for those in Asian countries, I mean the northern part of Europe, we don't have any of these insects that you have, you know, like they don't grow there, they don't flourish, they don't breed. So we're not used to that. And then I realized that because of that, because of my fussiness, nobody wanted me to go with them. Because they'd say, she's too fussy, I'm not taking her. And so I started losing out on opportunities. Because I wanted everything comfortable, everything perfect, you know. So then I started easing up. As a teenager, I started to ease up, let go. You know, when they stop the taxi somewhere, you go bathroom, you don't make a fuss, you don't react, you don't spoil your face, you know, you just do your thing and come back, you know. And so this is my point, that the more fussy we are, then we really can't enjoy life. And for those of you who have been camping or, you know, done something outdoors like that, like lived outside, you know that it is lovely and you're back to nature, back to the earth, and you learn so many skills, you learn so many powers, don't you? By just, you know, adapting to the floor, to the bathroom, to the food, the cleanliness, whatever. And you do survive. That's the important thing. You survive. You don't die. Has anybody died of camping? No. You know? So this is my point about, yeah, why am I holding on to the, you know, my comfort zone instead of just being easy and free and taking pleasure from everything. Again? Yeah. Yeah, if you don't want to change, that means what? You're in your comfort zone, yeah. Yeah. And so for that, we have to see what are the benefits of moving out of that. In other words, I'm expanding my comfort zone. I mean, again, let's look back at the Yajna and the Dadis. I mean, they came from such great homes where they had servants, where they didn't wash a teacup. And then they have to go by rickshaw, well, maybe walking sometimes down the mountain, maybe on some horse. And then they get into a train where they don't even have a proper tier, they don't have a ticket, so they can't even sleep properly. And they just have to sit somewhere because they're going for free. You know? And then they get off, they don't even know where they're going to stay when they get off in Delhi or Lucknow or whatever. Everything is an unknown. And they adjusted, they adapted. Why? Because Baba's work, Baba's work, Baba's seva. We have to give the message. And for that, we have to adjust. You know, we have to tolerate. So they expanded their comfort zone, right? And that's why they have all these comfortable places. That's why everybody's there looking after them. Because first you have to renounce to get. Not get and then say, you know, I'll give it up. No. Okay, we'll get you up in a minute, but just let me read this. So, Amir Chandbhai, finally it was time to return. Right? You know Amir Chandbhai, right? Of Chandigarh? No? Okay, he's mostly now in Shantivan. He spends a lot of time there now. My mind was not ready to return. Who would want to go to the old world and leave behind all godly pleasure and happiness? I set my mind with great difficulty, with tears in my eyes. I took leave from Baba and from Madhuban and arrived at the train station in Abu Road. My mind was sad and dejected. Like, not happy, let's say. I wrote a letter to beloved Baba while sitting on the platform. Sweet Baba, I feel as if a flower has been separated from its branch. I feel my power is decreasing, having been separated from you. My mind is sad. Right, so that's the letter he wrote to Baba. And what was Baba's response? Baba said, I received Baba's letter a couple of days after I returned to my service place. Baba had written with great love, received the letter from the jewel of my eye, child Amirchand. The flower was not cut away from its branch. This flower was sent on service to spread its fragrance. The Father's home is your home. You may come whenever you want to. These words from beloved Baba have proved a blessing for me up to today. Even now I feel that Madhuban is my home and I go every month for some service and return again after 15-20 days. My task is to spread the fragrance and to make the souls complete with divine virtues again. So again, it's kind of shifting attitude, isn't it? Like, which is the comfort zone? Is the comfort zone, like, say for me, Kuwait? Or is this the comfort zone? Which is your home? Do you see? So when we come to Madhuban, we feel home. When we go to our service place, we feel home. I mean, everything should feel its home, actually. We go to another center, it should feel like home. But we're talking about the comfort zone in here. It's about, you know, being adjusting, being flexible. The ego is too rigid. It doesn't want to be flexible. It doesn't want to expand. Because again, it thinks it's right. Right? Okay, everybody stand up again. Let's do another exercise before I ask those questions. Okay, so again, face the partner. Anyone, male, female, doesn't matter. You won't touch each other. Okay, so label yourself A and B. A and B, okay? One of you's A, one of you's B, yeah? Okay. So A is going to lead. So whatever actions A does, B has to mind that back. Okay? A has to do any action, and B has to do the same. Mime it back. Okay? A will lead. Look at them. And B has to follow and mime it back.
go dancing now. Just dance.
Good. Got your blood going? Okay, so you got out of your comfort zone, didn't you? Good. See, we need to do things like that. Okay, so next question. Let's have a couple of questions now. What do I need to do to come out of my comfort zone? Let me ask myself, what do I need to do to come out of my comfort zone? Okay, next question. What will I learn from expanding my comfort zone? What will I personally learn from expanding my comfort zone? And don't forget to fill this out, right? Comfort zone. What is my thought? Am I currently, like when I'm in my comfort zone, what's the thought and what's the feeling? And then these questions are after that. What do I need to do to come out of the comfort zone? What will I learn from expanding my comfort zone? Okay, let's move on because time is going. So now what I'm going to do now, instead of reading the next ego event, I'm going to tell you a few stories and you try and guess from that what is the ego, right? That we're trying to address. Okay, so Dadi Nirmal Shanta. Baba would dress us in different frocks every day and give away the old ones to the poor people. These dresses had three or four pockets for a reason, so that we could put our biscuits and chocolates in them. So Baba means Yashoda Mata, whatever Baba, the dresses they made sure they had some pockets for their biscuits and chocolates. So, knowing that I loved biscuits and chocolates, Baba would give me some pocket money so that I would not have to ask from the shopkeeper, and so that we would not have to settle it later. You get it? So not that she goes and then Baba has to send the money later. So every morning Baba would give the children a few rupees, and at that time there were no paper notes, only coins. So Baba gave me 2 rupees, and he would say, "Don't spend all this money on chocolates and biscuits. Donate some as well. Because by donating, you will become a Maharani in your next birth." This is Brahma Baba talking to his daughter, Nirmal Shanta Dadi. So I thought, if I can become a Maharani by donating, then why not donate both rupees? because I knew that the chocolates and biscuits would be paid for later anyway. Because the shopkeeper would send the bills to Baba the next day. So Baba wanted to know, what did you do with the rupees? And so she would reply that, Baba, you said that by donating, one becomes a Maharani. So I donated it all. And so upon hearing this, Baba would reply, what would Baba say? Huh? Baba said, no problem. Baba said, no problem, child. It is good you have this sanskar of donating. This is why I had no worries what Baba would say. So I would donate and then get the chocolates and biscuits for free, and then they would get the money later anyway. Okay, next. Baba had instilled this sanskar, natural sanskar of bhakti and bhavana, you know, bhakti, like devotion, and giving donations in all of us. One day I remember a poor lady had come to ask Mother Jashoda for some money for marrying off her daughter. Right? So she came asking some money to marry her daughter. Mama said, her mama means her mother, Jashoda Mata, said, okay, but come back tomorrow and I will ask Baba tonight. So Dadi, Nirmal Shanta, the daughter, felt she can't go away empty-handed. So she went out through the back door, took off her gold bangles, and gave them to the poor lady. When Baba heard of this, he said, no problem. He said, no problem, child. Baba will give you new ones. It is good you have this sanskar. So what's the ego that I'm trying to address here? Donation is crushing the ego. Yeah. So ego is selfish. Yeah. Right, next event is ego is selfish. So ego doesn't like to share, ego doesn't like to care, only cares for itself. Ego doesn't consider the we. Ego only considers the I. And ego always wants to get there first, right? Let me be the first in the queue. Actually, we had this discussion in one of our Dharana classes in Kuwait. So there are some smart people, right? There are a lot of smart BKs, right? Who can get to the front of the line and get the toli and get first in the dining line and, right? But if you're doing that at the expense of pushing in, or doing it without love and respect, then you couldn't be smart, but you won't get the blessings. Do you see? So we can all be smart, like even drivers on the road, like you can push in and, you know, get in front of the queue. But are we getting the blessings? Don't we want to get the blessings? Don't we want to get as much blessings as we can at the confluence age? It's not always about being right, and it's not always about getting my needs met. So, again, you know, we have to be more conscious of our acts. Sometimes it's just better to wait, be patient, think of others, put them forward. At least you get blessings. The other way, you just get toli. But this way, you get good wishes, blessings. Yeah? Okay. So back, write the event and what's the thought and the feeling when you're being selfish? Right? On this. What is the thought and the feeling when you are being selfish? And the next question for that. Why do I find it difficult to care? Why do I find it difficult to care? Why do I find it difficult to care? And what is, next question, what is the root of my selfishness? And try and look back to your graph, this chart. When did the selfishness take birth? Was it at home maybe? Was there not enough to eat? So I started thinking of me. Maybe not enough love to go around. So I just started seeking attention of my mother or father. What is the root of my selfishness? Next question, how can I be more generous? How can I be more generous? So it's not just money. Maybe just sitting and listening to someone, going out of my way. Because real giving is when, you know, you're busy but you give. That's the real giving, isn't it? Real giving is when you make time for it, even though you're a busy person. But if you have plenty of time and you give, that's not a big deal. Or when you have a lot of money and you give, that's not a big deal. But it's when you have little and you give. That's called generosity. You can be generous with your time, with your wealth, with your company, your good wishes. Shall we just answer them together? Why do I find it difficult to care? Maybe fear. I don't know how the response will be. Yeah? What else? You don't find it difficult to care? No? Yeah, to go out of your way. Yeah, if nobody takes care of you, how can you take care of others? Well, that's the feeling, right? So I can't care for others because I think nobody takes care of me. So obviously that's an expectation, isn't it? Again? You don't want them to be dependent on you, okay? So you don't care. There's a fine line, isn't there, between caring and making them independent and making them dependent. This is where we have to keep the balance, actually, of love and law. You give, but then you have to know when to stop. Anyway, check yourself. Think of a situation where somebody really needs it and you're not giving it. So ask yourself why you're not able to give them that love and attention. Maybe it's a difficult person in your life. Why you can't give them your love and care? Yeah, generally you're a caring person, but sometimes we always have one person where there's some karmic account and it's difficult. What is the root of my selfishness? Insecurity, low self-esteem, scarcity consciousness. You know, scarcity consciousness when you think there's not enough to go around. How can I be more generous? Anyone there? Hello? How can I be more generous?
By
giving without expecting.
And know about, karma.
Good. Understand karma. As I give, I get. And just doing it. Like, I mean, what I mean is, try to make it a point. Focus on that maybe every day to give something from yourself.
Nothing belongs to me.
We are just trustees. Yeah, and again, this thing of if I'm generous, I'm teaching others to be generous. Compassion, yeah. Have compassion. Okay. Next event is ego loves predictability. Ego loves to predict everything, right? So if something is out of line, the ego screams and shouts, no, it's not like that. It should have been like that. Right? So it can't handle it. It's a bit like perfect, isn't it? Perfectionist. So the ego can only handle the known and not the unknown. And the ego does everything in its power to keep things and people in their places, yeah, in this control, so that there are no surprises. Flexibility is not an option for the ego. So, here's a story, again, Nirmal Shanta Dadi. One day, my small brother Narayan and I ended up in the main shop as we were playing. Baba was very busy, but he was alone. There were no customers, just the helpers in the shop. Baba was looking at the diamonds very closely with a magnifying glass. So Baba's attention was fully focused on examining the diamonds. Baba was alone in the same way as he would be at home. So I ran behind him, right? So Baba's here looking, and I ran behind him. Remember, she's young, small. And I put both my arms and hugged Baba. Okay, and I started to swing from behind. Okay? So imagine the scene. Baba's looking at the diamonds. She comes running. And then she starts to swing. As I began swinging, the packet filled with diamonds in Baba's hand went flying. And they got scattered everywhere. The packet was in one place and the diamonds all over the other place. Baba then turned to me and said, child, what did you do? Huh? Kya kiya? You dropped or you spilled all the diamonds. Baba had been sitting, separating them in different categories. And Baba said, see, now you have mixed them up. Okay, go home now and don't come at such a time. And it's true, I've heard this from a few places, this story, a few different sources. And Baba would never get angry. Imagine if you had diamonds in your hand. And somebody came and, you know, went like this. You'd be mad. But these are diamonds and Baba's treating them like marbles. And yeah, exactly. Exactly. So then Baba just said, okay, go home now. He called the driver and he sent them home. Then, yeah, see? Then he fed us pan. You know, this betel nut leaf? You know, they sell it in the market, this leaf with all this spice, the betel nut and the masala, and you basically chew it. So taxi drivers chew it and spit, right? But it's very nice. It used to be very nice when we used to eat it. So Baba gave them that and sent them home. Imagine. So that's an aspect of predictability, isn't it? Nothing was going the way Baba wanted it to. Okay, here's another one. Then again, Nirmal Shantaradi. The next day, when we went for our morning walk to Victoria Memorial, then we said to Baba, we will go to Eden Garden. So every morning they would go for a walk with Baba, right? Narayan and Dadi Nirmal Shanta were close in age. So Baba would take them out for a walk. So Baba would only take us to where we wanted to go. But in our mind there was something else brewing. After 10-15 minutes of playing, we both made an excuse and I told Baba, today I have a lot of stomach pain and I would like to go home. Baba believed us and sent us back with the driver. In the home on the first floor, right, the first floor, was the main shop. And the workers used to clean the shop in the morning. And whatever had fallen on the floor, they would give it to Baba during the day. I knew that the diamonds... Okay, so they went back to the main shop and whatever had fallen, the shop, the boys who worked in the shop, they would give it to Baba. I knew that the diamonds that fell yesterday would be even below the cushions and the counters. So both of us, right, she and Narayan Dada, so both of us lost ourselves in the area that Baba was sitting. The accountant asked us, why have you come so early today? So we said that we had some work to do. And he couldn't stop us. Right? They're Brahma Baba's children. They can't be stopped, right? We actually used to come in the daytime, but today we came in the morning. Whatever diamonds we found, we collected them. As quickly as possible, we investigated the area, under the cushion, below the sheets, and from here and there, and put the diamonds we found into the small packet, and we left for home. So their home was on the next floor. After some time, Baba arrived. His habit was to go to the shop first, on the first floor, and then to come home on the next floor. Just as Baba entered the shop, everything was topsy-turvy, you know, uttal-patal. Like the cushions were turned and this and that. And so he asked the accountant, what happened? So the accountant mentioned that Palu, right, Nirmal Shantadadi, and Narayan were both here before you. The diamonds that were spilled yesterday, they collected them and put them in their pockets and walked away. Okay, so the boy in the shop told Baba this. Oh, so that's the story, is it? Baba said. Baba was very clever, very shrewd. And he knew exactly what was going on. In 1 second, he understood everything. They have only taken the diamonds home and we will get them back, Baba said. Right? Baba said, they've only gone home anyway, we'll get them back. So never mind. Baba was carefree and he came home as usual. We were afraid. What if Baba comes and says something? Of course, the one who is guilty is always afraid. But Baba knew everything. How many diamonds, how many packets, and how many had fallen. Even after knowing everything, he did not say a word. After coming home, he bathed, right? So he went walking, came back, showered, he worshipped, he ate, and around 10 o'clock, he was to go back to the shop, and suddenly, and obviously intentionally, he said, child Palu, right, Palu Betty, today the goldsmiths are free. They don't have any work. Tell me, would you like to wear
something new around your neck? And I said, Baba, yes, I would like a diamond buckle. And Baba said, what else? I said, it would be nice if it had some music playing in it. And then Narayan said, yes, I would like a ring for myself. Okay? Then Baba took the order and replied, well, these will need a lot of diamonds and maybe we will fall short of them in the shop. So, do you have any extra diamonds? Then we can mix both and give it to the goldsmith right away and you will have your things by tonight. We were so innocent and foolish. We didn't even have that much sense to hide our story, which is why we quickly responded by saying, yes, Baba, here. And we gave to Baba the diamonds we had, and Baba said, okay, bring them and I will give them to the goldsmith right away. So, that was ego loves predictability. So imagine, what did Dadi learn from that? What are we learning from that story? What are we learning from that story, from Brahma Baba? What are we learning? Don't make the children feel guilty by what they've done. Use tactfulness, diplomacy, even if it's children, huh? Imagine. Have a big heart. What else do you learn from that story? Don't concentrate on others' mistake. And that, it's only diamonds, isn't it? Like, actually this was the realization Brahma Baba had, you know? Like, as soon as he found the knowledge and he had those visions in Banaras, he came back to his business partner. So Brahma Baba had like 51% of the shares and he had 49, his business partner, Sevakram. And Baba said to him, you know what? You divide the business. I don't want anything to do with this. You can have your share and you can take the name and do what you want. And that's when Baba wrote, no, that like, I have found, like, A ko mili Allah, B ko mili Badshah. You know, there was this poem that Baba said. In other words, he found Allah and he found everything. And his business partner, who's B, who's the second partner, he got the shop, which is his, you can say, Brahma Baba's inheritance. So what I'm saying is, imagine like giving up everything and saying these diamonds are nothing compared to that. And also I remember that when I was living in Turkey, in the center, of course, and so Dadi Gulzar had come. So we took Dadi Gulzar to see Topkapi Palace, and Topkapi Palace is very famous where it has a lot of emeralds and a lot of jewelry from the Ottoman Empire and some things from India. So it's really worth seeing that exhibition. So we took Dadi Gulzar, and Nilu Ben asked Dadi Gulzar, Dadi, will it be like this in the Golden Age? And again, Dadi's attitude and reaction, Dadi said, this is nothing. You know, she said, this is nothing compared to the Golden Age, because she sees all this in the visions. Dadi Gulzar sees the Golden Age in the visions. So this is my point, that really what we see in the world is nothing compared to what Baba wants to give us. And that's why we can't give it so much importance. You know, that drama is not as important as my stage. So that's the point about the diamonds, right? You don't predict, and also don't predict the reaction. Okay, next event. I won't ask questions now. Next event, ego loves to blame. So you can analyze yourself with predictability. ask yourself, like, what do I love about predictability? Why am I stuck on things being perfect, predictable? You can do that reflection yourself, okay? So next is ego loves to blame, right? So we know that blaming is a very toxic behavior. Blaming means what? I don't take responsibility. So I want to blame somebody else so I come out looking good. I come out looking better. So when I'm blaming, right? When I'm blaming, I'm doing this, right? So one finger at you and three fingers at me. So yes, when I'm blaming them, it's actually me that's at fault. But that's not the point. When I'm blaming, what am I doing? I'm not taking responsibility for myself. Blame is the opposite of responsibility. So if I blame you for my lack, if I blame you for my loss of happiness, then what am I saying? That only you can give my happiness back. If I'm blaming you that, see, I lost my job, what am I saying? Only you can get me my job back. So blame and responsibility are opposite. So as Swaman, as people with Swaman and self-respect, we need to take responsibility for our feelings, for our thoughts. And that's the humbling part. But the ego always wants to put it on others. So you're to be blamed. So if I make you look bad, I come out top, you see? I come out super. So it's about putting others down. And again, doesn't work. Doesn't work because we don't have, we don't win friends, we don't win good wishes, we don't win blessings, we don't win cooperation. If somebody knows you're always blaming other people, they're not going to want to work with you. Because they'll think, oh no, she'll blame me next. Anyway, there's one story about that where, so basically there was these sisters who were arguing, and it was with Mama, this story. So they were arguing, and so one of them came and told Mama that, Mama, so-and-so is doing this, so-and-so is doing that. So Mama said, acha, acha. And Mama gave her the correction she needed. Then the other one came afterwards, a few hours later, and said, Mama, I saw that you were talking to this sister. Did she say anything about me? And Mama said, what do you want to say? What do you want to say about your mistake? Or what do you want to say about yourself? And she said, Mama, I realized I did this wrong, I did that wrong, I shouldn't have said that, I shouldn't have said that. And Baba, and Mama said, good. Because Mama said that you can be in a conflict, you can be in a dispute, but when you realize what you've done wrong, then that's your lesson learned. Whereas the other sister was still blaming this one, that she did things wrong. But this one realized we were both wrong, but I realized what I needed to change. And in another similar incident like that, also Mama, you know, the sister came complaining to Mama. And Mama said, but why is your face changing? You know, when we start telling like a senior, she did this and she did that and la la la, you know, and so we get angry or we get annoyed or we lose our peace or we lose our happiness. So Mama said, why is your face spoiled as you're telling the story? Why can't you be neutral as you tell the story? So why is it that we get emotional with the stories? You see? So this is the thing about blame. It does make us take sides, doesn't keep us neutral. And that's what Mama was really good at. Not pointing the finger to anyone, but just making each one realize, you know, what is their mistake. And that's because they came and asked her. Otherwise, I don't think she would, unless it was something really major. Mama Baba never pointed out mistakes unless it really affected the yajna. But each one would see their mistake as Mama and Baba mirrored You know, when they saw themselves in the mirror of Mama Baba, they realized that this was our mistake. And they stopped doing it. And yeah, I just remembered another story, you know, where there was this sister and she was wearing such slippers that she was wearing such slippers that it was making a noise. You know, like when you come down the steps or when you walk, it goes tuck, 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 you know, like right? And so then Baba said, Mama, it's time to get the sisters some other slippers, you know? So rather than to correct her and tell her that, you know, you're making so much noise, Baba said to Mama, get the daughters some other slippers. And so they learned from that yeah, they're not supposed to be wearing such fancy slippers. Okay, next, ego is scared. So, next event, ego is scared. This is the last one, okay? So ego, it fears defeat, complexity. And that's why ego finds it difficult to love, because fear is opposite of love. And ego finds it hard to engage, lovingly engage. Love embraces and ego keeps everyone at a distance. And so there's this story of Brahma Baba's humility, you know, when what happened is when Baba used to do the gatherings, so why did the king say that, you know, especially, who is it, that one? Is it Udaipur? The one who was paralyzed? I think it's Udaipur, the king of Udaipur. And so he used to say that, I have everything but I can't enjoy it. And God should have made you the king, because you have kingly sanskars. You know, you don't have the position or the wealth, but you have those sanskars. Anyway, so the king of Nepal had so much respect for Baba that when Baba would visit Kathmandu, he knew that Baba did not like alcohol. And Brahma Baba would take his daughter with him to, again, you know, show the sets, the necklaces and that. But when they used to dine together, the king would have so much respect that he would go to the other chamber and drink his alcohol and not drink it in front of Baba. So again, so much love. So you can think that, you know, Brahma Baba, such a big personality, and that the king is king in his position, that he can do anything in front of Brahma Baba, but his Brahma Baba's love and his power just didn't allow others to behave that way in front of him. You understanding? So he had so much authority. What I'm saying is humility was his authority. But if Brahma Baba had been arrogant, the king would have drunk alcohol in front of him. So sometimes it's our humility really that wins the love and respect. And people respect us for that. I mean, they won't do such things in front of us. And then just, okay, I'm just conscious of the time now. Anyway, just look at that, ego, just look at that, put that here and just put the thought and feeling about ego and scared. Why am I scared? Why does ego make me scared? And why is it difficult to embrace or accept? Embrace here means accept. Many realizations today.
we really have to make the ego redundant now. We've had such a close relationship. But I realize the ego has lied to me. Ego has betrayed me. It promised me things and it didn't deliver. And as a yogi now, I've learned to feel the freedom from ego. We often talk about the air of arrogance. But how about the air of freedom? When we let go of our comfort zone, security, fear, predictability, seriousness, being right, we become light and easy and free and happy. You to choose, talk to yourself, tell yourself, convince yourself that I choose to be happy. I do not want to be in the claws of ego. I don't like myself. Other people don't like me when I'm being arrogant. So now I look towards humility. I want to make humility my friend. Humility is my passport to the golden age. The golden age, we are humble because we are all equal. Even though there is a king, but there's the feeling of equality. Confluence age, Baba creates a family. So in a family there is no competition. All brothers and sisters, total acceptance, gift and each have their qualities. Brahma Baba exemplified absolute humility in all areas. The Dadis exemplified humility. Brahma Baba helped the children to completely clean out their chit, their inner core, so there was no trace of any vice, no ego, no attachment, no greed, no lust, no anger. They melted all this in those hours of tapasya. So how much tapasya do I need to do to melt away the remaining ego? Absolute, pure soul consciousness is the key. It's like I have to build my whole identity again, based on I, the soul. Everything else is based on body consciousness, based on the physical birth. But now this divine birth with Baba, creates a complete new sense of self. For humility, we need to trust that everything that is coming to me is destined. Nothing and no one can stop that. No one can snatch my fortune. Alter my destiny. Mm-hmm. So we will have to make conscious practices of humility. So think about how you will practice conscious humility. Until we can be convinced that humility works. So give up that opportunity. Give up that seat. Give up being right. Drama behind. And what matters most is my stage. I want to create a very powerful stage. One that is very calm and peaceful. No matter what. So just hold on to that thought. I'm here to create my stage. And I should be totally interested and focused on creating my stage. Fully interested. Baba is the creator, the director, the producer, the main hero actor of this drama. And yet he is the humblest of all. Let us learn from him. Questions? We have a few minutes. Those who have taken the pens, if you can return them. Yeah, shall I say? So this evening,
As I said, we'll continue, but now we'll focus more on self-respect. Swaman. Loving the self. And that will be 5:30 to 7:30 in Harmony Hall in Gyan Sarovar. Harmony Hall in Gyan Sarovar. So try to sit at the front, because again, we'll...
Yeah, so we're encouraging everyone to keep the atmosphere and to be in Gyan Sarovar to complete this valuable workshop in self-development. And actually, Aruna is also a specialist in conflict resolution. So whatever conflict we have within ourselves, we can free ourselves of this. And just a reminder that after the workshop, Didi Namala will be giving gifts, and if we have any gifts to give, please to bring those this evening as well. Thank you very much, and thank you, Aruna Bhai.
So yeah, I think try and reflect on this. Try and stay with the retreat, like. Just try and stay with yourself so that we can develop this and come out the other end for this evening, yeah? Maybe try not to talk too much. Don't come into too much grossness, that's what I mean. Okay, thank you.